All right, so we're underneath the speaker's lounge here. Who are you?
My name is Tom Raftery. I come from Cork in Ireland.
All right.
I'm kind of confused. I do lots of different things.
Okay.
My main job, I guess, for about 60% of my time is I'm a social media consultant.
Okay.
Basically, I go into companies and I help them make use of social media, things like blogs, podcasts, wikis, that kind of stuff. So if they want to use blogs for knowledge management, or if they have a knowledge management project, I'll typically recommend getting their users to start blogging and have them strategize around that.
Okay.
Or, you know, if they have an internal company communications project they want to talk about, I'll work with them on that, or external or brand management or these kind of things. I'll talk to companies around that. Also, that's one half. I'm a director of a data center company. We're at the moment in the middle of building a data center in Cork.
Nice.
There are 8 data centers in Ireland right now, 8 commercial ones. There are private ones as well, but 8 commercial ones. They're all in Dublin. So we're building the first data center in Ireland outside of Dublin in Cork.
Wow.
We have a website, and that's cix.ie. And it's kind of unusual because I don't know that anyone has done it before. We're blogging and documenting on the blog the build out of the data center. So we're, you know.
That is. Usually they're pretty hush hush about it.
Yeah, exactly. We decided to go the opposite route and be as open as we can be. So we're showing off our power infrastructure. We're showing off the ducting for the data. You know, we're showing off the cooling infrastructure. We have a lot of. We decided in the build of the data center that we were going to be hyper efficient around energy because. The bandwidth costs in Cork are 4 times what they are in Dublin. So if we wanted to be in any way competitive on a price basis with the Dublin data centres, we needed to be innovative around costing. And the best way we could tackle the costs, the main costs in running a data centre are the likes of staffing, bandwidth and energy. Staffing, you know, you have to pay people.
Sure.
Bandwidth, expensive, but overall it's coming down in price. Energy, only going up in price.
Okay.
So we decided to tackle that one and focus heavily on that one. So normal data centers operate at around 30% energy efficiency.
Okay.
Ours is operating at 80% energy efficiency.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
So now, you know, some of the trends are to build underground for obvious reasons, for cooling reasons, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you following that model or
no?
No.
We don't need to.
You're not going to have that much infrastructure.
It's not that. But being based in Cork, we're at the same latitude as Newfoundland. You know? Now, Cork has the Gulf Stream, so it's not quite as cold as Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
But the average temperature in Cork, day, night, summer, winter, is 10 degrees centigrade.
Wow.
I'm not sure what that's in Fahrenheit.
You still live there?
Not for long. I'm not kidding.
Oh, really?
I'm not kidding.
That's another topic.
That's another story. I'm moving to Seville next year.
Slightly different climate.
Slightly different climate. Yeah, there'll be different issues if I build a data center there.
Absolutely. Be way underground.
Yes.
Or really way up near the clouds, right?
Might be a little bit
expensive. Harder. Yeah. Yeah, that's for the, you know, top shelf.
It'd be quite secure, I imagine.
Yeah.
So, as I say, we're blogging the build of the data center,
uh-huh.
And we're also blogging the energy efficiency strategies that we're doing. So we're being very, very open about that too. There's nothing proprietary there. We're giving it away because we think everyone should have that kind of energy efficiency built into their data centers. The data centers that are already there can't really deploy a lot of the strategies we've gone for, but anyone who's thinking of building one should be doing some of the things that we've done.
Excellent.
So I mentioned the 10 degrees C in Cork.
Yeah.
One of the things we're doing to use that to our advantage is we're sealing the racks. We're sealing the cold aisle of the racks. So the typically in data centers you have a hot aisle and a cold aisle. The hot aisle is where the backs of the racks blow out the hot air from the servers.
Mm-hmm.
So they blow it into a hot aisle, and then you have cold aisles on either side where the air is coming up through the floor, the chilled air. So we're sealing the cold aisle. We're putting a roof on the cold aisle.
Okay.
And doors at either end. And what that means is that the cold air will never mix with the hot air. So if you get hot air and cold air mixing, you get a delta of temperature from the bottom of the rack to the top of the rack, and you get inefficiencies because you've just spent a lot of money chilling this air.
Sure.
And now you've got the warm air just coming off the top, heating it for you, which is no good for your servers and no good for your energy efficiency.
Yeah.
So if we seal the cold aisle and we blow the hot air out to the room, the air in the room is 10 degrees C on average. The hot air coming out the back is 40 degrees C. So the 10 degrees C is going to cool that 40 degrees down to maybe 25 degrees, 30, 25 degrees. So that's 10 degrees chilling that we've got free and gratis.
Nice.
You know, just thanks to where we are. It won't work that way all the time. There'll be summer days when, you know, the outside temperature will be 25 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But even on those summer nights, the temperature will dip down to 10, 12 degrees.
Okay.
And that works in our favor. So that helps an awful lot in terms of cooling and cooling costs.
Great.
The disadvantage of it is a perception disadvantage, because unless we educate people about this, when people walk into the server room, they're going to be walking into a hot room. You know, it'll be typically 25 or 30 degrees in there. And when people walk into a data center, they expect it to be cold. So we have to educate our customers as we're bringing them in as to why it's hot when they go into the room and why this is a good thing. But
yes,
other than that, it's great. It saves us a fortune.
Outstanding. It's actually a very smart, efficient use of energy.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly.
There are a lot of other things we've done. Am I going way off topic, or is this good
there
to
is
talk
no,
about?
Oh, there is no topic.
Great.
This is Channel 9. Topic? There is no topic.
Great.
But this is good. I mean, eventually, I mean, you wear two very different hats.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah. The first hat, I definitely want to ask you some questions about, but of course
sure.
This hat, which I was unaware of existed, is also incredibly interesting, so
yeah.
You can continue on.
Okay, so typically in data centers, the air conditioning has separate chiller units, which are on the roof, and what the chiller units do is they chill the water for cooling the air.
Okay.
Now, these are very expensive to run. And what normally happens when a data center is being commissioned is the contractors come in, put the chillers in place, and they say to the data center owners, you know, what temperature do you want the water coming out of the chillers at? Data center owner goes, about 6 degrees C is typical. So
okay.
We go for that. So Rand, engineer, goes, 6 degrees C, and walks away, and that's it.
Okay.
From then on out, 6 degrees comes out. We looked at this and we said, that's crazy. Because you don't need 6 degrees C at all times. In fact, you don't need it most of the time. Why not have a dynamic feedback from the air conditioning or the air handling units in the data center room to say what temperature the air handling units want the water coming out of them? And if you can maximize the temperature of the water coming out of the chillers, so bring it up to 10 degrees at times, you're saving money on not having to chill out as much. You get a double benefit from it. First of all, you're saving money on not having to chill the water as much. But secondly, the chilled water, if it was coming in at 6 degrees, and sometimes it will be because sometimes we'll need that, but if it's coming in at 6 degrees all the time, you get condensation on the water pipes.
Ah.
And condensation is problematic because, not for reasons of corrosion, but it's problematic because it reduces the amount of humidity in the air in your data center room.
Absolutely.
And if that'll lead to electrostatic discharge. You don't want that. So... In normal data centers, how they counteract that is in the air handling units, they have humidifiers built into the air handling units, which are basically little boilers that boil water.
Okay.
So when you're boiling water, you're creating heat.
Yes.
Which you then have to cool. And you're burning energy to create that heat.
Yes.
So if you don't create the condensation in the first place by keeping your temperature high and saving money there, you also, by not creating the condensation, you don't have to turn on the humidifier. You don't have to boil the water, and you don't have to get rid of that heat that you've just created by boiling the water.
Okay, understood. Now, one of the questions I would ask, for example, let's consider the Death Star as an example. Pretend like you have the Death Star, and you can imagine the data center on the Death Star. And I'm a Star Wars fan, so I use the term a lot. And no, I'm not relating this to Microsoft, but sometimes I do. It's fun. But if you think of the Death Star... And you have that massive of a data center. Certainly, you know, I guess my question is, can your thing scale? So there you might have so much, you're generating so much, you require so much power for your data center that using these things that you're doing alone might not cut it, but perhaps could help.
Sure,
absolutely. So let's talk about the scale of what you're doing.
The scale of what we're doing right now is small enough. The initial build would be a 3,000 square foot data center room, so quite small. Cork is a small city. It doesn't require a massive data center.
Sure.
But we started with 3,000 square feet. The building we're in, we own the building, and the room next to the room we're in is another 3,000 square feet, and that's on short-term lease to a local community organization.
Okay.
So when the first room starts to fill, and that's going to happen pretty quickly,
yeah.
we can then terminate the lease,
yeah.
take over the second room. There'll be no planning issues because we own the, it'll be all internal work and we own the room.
Mm-hmm.
We just put in a raised floor. The cabling and all the ducting is already in place for it.
Mm-hmm.
So we just put in the raised floor, put in the racks, and we're boom, we've just doubled our size.
Nice.
We also own 6,000 square feet of grass outside the front of the building.
Okay.
So if we need to double it again,
yeah.
a couple of months through the planning process, a couple of months through the build, within 3-4 months, we've gone from 6,000 to 12,000 square feet.
Okay.
So 12,000 is the maximum in the current location that we can go to, but right now we're starting with 3.
Okay. Good. So let's switch over to your other hat, you know,
okay.
and, yeah.
Oh, and there's a third hat?
There is a third hat? Oh, really? Oh, man. What's the third hat?
I'm involved in a startup called Synergy Module. It's at synergymodule.com. And it's kind of related to the data center one because uh-huh. Synergy Module is about energy efficiency.
Okay.
So what we're doing there is we're creating a company which will use supply chain management theory to enable countries to increase the penetration of wind energy onto their electrical grids.
Okay.
So it's kind of a big play. It's yes. particularly relevant in Ireland because our government has committed to increasing the penetration of wind energy from the current 6.5% to 33% by 2025.
Wow.
And wind energy is extremely problematic for grid management companies because it's very unstable.
Mm.
And it's very variable, I suppose, rather than unstable. It's very variable, but it destabilizes the electrical grid. The way it does that is if you think of, say, your typical situation, a summer's evening, say, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, you've got very little demand on the network for electricity, and you've got a significant contribution from wind energy. So in Ireland's case, summer nights, summer mornings, 2-3 in the morning, the typical demand is 1.8 gigawatts. At that time, if you've got a 40-mile-an-hour wind blowing across the country, the contribution from wind energy is coming in around 0.9 of a gigawatt.
Okay.
So that's almost 50% of the demand. Now, at that time, if the wind goes from 40 miles an hour across the country to 50 miles an hour across the country, the wind farms shut down to protect their mechanisms.
Hmm.
So suddenly the grid management company is left with a situation where 50% of their generation capacity has just disappeared. And they have to scramble to bring up spinning reserve and to fire up gas-fired turbines to try and meet the sudden fall-off in wind energy. And that's with the current situation where we have 6.5% penetration. When we get to 33%, that's going to be massively exacerbated. By 2025, we're looking at a situation where the demand will be around 10 gigawatts, and on the kind of summer nights, the minimum demand, that'll come in around 3.5 gigawatts. At that time, when we have a 3.5 gigawatt demand, there's a strong possibility that we'll be getting over 6 gigawatts supply from wind.
Wow.
So we can be getting 2.5, 3 gigawatts of power that we don't need. We don't have an interconnect to give it to somebody else.
Yeah.
You can't put it in a box and stick it on a shelf and wait in the morning, everyone starts turning on their toasters.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with that extra 2, 3 gigawatts of power? There's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And there's an extra problem as well because the government is committed to this 33% thing, the grid management company cannot disconnect the wind farms. And that's a political issue. They can't disconnect them because if they disconnect the wind farms, that stops the revenue stream for the wind farms. Revenue stream for the wind farms stops the banks stop funding them.
Yeah.
Banks stop funding them, they're not going to be built, we won't achieve the 33% penetration.
Hmm.
So wind farms cannot be turned off.
Good.
So
The
business I'm involved in then, as a result, is looking at using what's called energy demand management to alter the demand profile for energy. So we're trying to make the demand for energy match the supply from wind.
Wow.
Typically, supply from wind is highest overnight and demand is lowest overnight. So they're almost exactly out of sync. So if you try and time shift people's energy demands, then you can try and increase that minimum. So say get people to turn on their dryers at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now no one's going to get up to do that. So you have a little module, a synergy module that you install in your house, connected to your smart meter, connects back to our application via web services.
Yeah.
It finds out the current electricity price and decides to turn on the dryer at that time because electricity is favorably priced.
Excellent.
If you think of a situation where we've got a demand of 3.5 gigawatts and a supply of 6 gigawatts, at that time, electricity is going to be negatively priced.
Okay.
So you'll be paid to take electricity off the network. Now, I'm talking about a domestic situation. But initially, we're going to start with industrial applications.
I was going to say, yes.
Far bigger, far easier need. To hit that audience and far bigger need. So you think of things like refrigeration plants. Mm-hmm. You have a connection to the refrigeration plant over web services using the Synergy module.
Yeah.
And you talk to the thermostat in the refrigeration plant. And if refrigeration plants are freezing food to, say, minus 16, they don't care if the food is at minus 16 or minus 18 or minus 20 or minus 30. So at times when there's an abundance of electricity, you get them to turn on their compressors by shifting the thermostat so that they start chilling the food even more and bring it to minus 30. And then when the demand for electricity is high and the supply is low, you turn off the compressors and you let the temperature drift back down from maybe minus 20 to minus 18 to minus 16 to minus 14. You know, to a point where you then have to kick them on again if it becomes dangerously high. But, you know, within a certain parameter, they don't care what the temperature is. And if they're being paid to take the electricity, even better. Similarly with diesel generators. People with diesel generators, get them to turn on the diesel generators dynamically based on electrical charges or electricity charges. So those kind of strategies, and all based on an energy market where the price is set dynamically by supply and demand. That's all. That's happening now in real time in Ireland. We turned on the single energy market in Ireland on the 1st of November, so pricing for electricity now is entirely dictated by supply and demand.
That's incredible. I mean, that's actually, you know, we really need this type of thing. I know that it's big in commuting. There's sort of this green, they're calling it green computing.
Yes.
Where people are actually writing software. There's companies that are actually writing software that will help enterprises and large companies with lots of computers everywhere intelligently monitor the power usage and control the power usage of said computers.
Right. Yeah.
So it's something that's big, that spans industries, and where I could see, I'm sure you obviously have a software powered device. You know, most devices are. And so you might also have extend that.
Yeah.
So briefly, because I have to say, this conversation initialized upstairs based on the first hat. I'm finding the other two hats probably equally more important. So we'll spend a little bit of time on the first hat.
Sure.
We've talked about it a fair amount, but that is, you know, Web 2.0 and blogging and this whole, you know, so I would ask really pretty blunt question. Why do people blog in your opinion? Why is it important?
Depends on who you're talking to.
So let's say we're talking to, you.
For me, it's very simple. Actually, it's not.
There's three reasons.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. That's precisely it. I blog first on CIX.ie, which is the data center company. I blog about the data center and the build of the data center because people's perceptions of a data center differ radically depending on what they've been exposed to. Mm-hmm. So if I say a data center to you, you might think of a 25 megawatt installation, multi-floor data center. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I say it to somebody in Cork, they might think of a closet with a couple of racks in it.
Yeah.
So to make sure we were getting people with the right perception of what our data center is going to be, we blogged and documented the entire build of it from the earth moving at the very start, the laying of the foundations, right through to the plumbing and all the electrical work and stuff like that. So that's all on the blog at CIX.ie.
Great.
So that's one reason. I blog on TomRafterEIT.net because I'm a social media consultant some of the time. And it's important for me to demonstrate to people that I'm familiar with the technology.
Okay.
That I can do it. Walk the walk.
Sure.
So that's what I do there. It's a branding exercise in that scenario. On Synergy Module, where we have that electrical device, we blog there about the technology and reasons for it and try and raise people's awareness of energy demand management and its importance. So there are lots of different reasons why I personally blog.
Yeah.
People within companies may be blogging because they might want to raise awareness of products they have or services they have, or they might want to get feedback on the product they're developing and see which direction to take it.
Yeah.
They might want to get people buying into the product before it's developed. If you involve people in the development process, you're already building up your sales cycle.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're talking about new features that you're thinking of building into your product, and people say, no, you shouldn't do that, you should do this. And if you take that on board and go, okay, that's a good idea, we should have thought of that, actually, we will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then when it comes time to bring it to market, these people have already bought in, and the features that they've asked for are included in the product, so it's an immediate sell.
Absolutely.
So there's that. Within companies on internal blogs, people blog to raise their own profile within the organization. And to make people aware of their skill sets.
Sure.
It's a very meritocratic medium. The more you blog about something about which you know a lot, the higher your profile for people who have an interest in that area.
Okay.
Companies blog to humanize themselves. To, you know, if you were to think of, say, Citibank, who do you think of straight away?
Citibank?
Yeah.
Who do I think of?
Yeah. What name springs to mind immediately?
None.
Exactly. I haven't a clue either. No idea. They don't have any bloggers on board that I know of. You know?
Cool.
So, but, you know, if I were to say Sun Microsystems to you, you'd probably think of Jonathan Schwartz.
Yeah.
He has a blog. He's the face of Sun.
Or if you said Microsoft, I'd think of 2,000 people.
You see?
I understand. I mean, I guess so you can use this through multiple ways that blogs can be used to interact with humans.
Blogs are also a learning mechanism. Often on my blog, if I'm talking about something, I'm frequently wrong. Or I haven't considered all the options, and people will come in the comments and they'll say, but Tom, you never thought about this. And I go, you know, you're absolutely right. I should have known that. Or if I have a question that I'm not sure of, I'll frequently throw it up on the blog and say, listen, I'm not sure about this. Has anyone come across this before? And people come in and say, yes, you need to do that. Excellent. You know, so it's not just a way of demonstrating expertise, it's a way of gaining expertise.
Outstanding. All right, well, I'm going to have to wrap this up. I have yet another interview to conduct here.
Cool.
But this has been really fascinating, and thank you for your time.
No problem.
I'll be looking to see what happens with your startup as well as your data center.
Yeah, the move to Spain is going to put a kind of a spanner in the works there, so I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But
well, Cork isn't that far away.
That's true.
All right. Nice to meet you.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.